It's the Kim Munson Show, analyzing the most important story.
Out here in Colorado, we had a sex education bill that was passed. It was signed by the governor and put into law. I just can't believe what is happening to public education.
The latest in politics and world affairs.
We are now using policy that if you don't affirm something, that they use policy then to take away your businesses.
Today's current opinions and ideas.
Kids are just being bombarded with darkness.
Is it freedom or is it force? Let's have a conversation.
You know, we need to get back to letting our kids be kids.
Uh-oh, guess what day it is? Guess what day it is? Leslie, guess what today is?
It's hump day.
Hump Day, and welcome to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. It is also Wings Day at Hooters Restaurants, producer Steve, and the girls are coming over tonight, so guess what we're going to be having?
No, I don't want to guess. I think I know, and the other thing I know is don't cut the line.
That's for sure. You learned that the hard way. You almost got a fork in your hand, right?
Well, I did end up in a snowbank in the backyard.
Yes, it is Wings Day over at Hooters Restaurants, which is a great sponsor of both the shows. You buy 20 wings, you get 10 for free, and that's for dine-in or to-go. And I do really like their smoked wings. They're half the calories, and do like those very much. So check out all my sponsors on my website. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter there. Email me at Kim@KimMunson.com as well. And thank you to all of you who support us. We are an independent voice. We search for truth and clarity by looking at these issues through this lens of freedom versus force, force versus freedom. If something's a good idea, you shouldn't have to force people to do it. And it is never compassionate to take other people's rights, their property, their freedom, or their livelihood via force, whether with a weapon, policy, unpredictable and excessive taxation, fear, coercion, or this latest silent thief, which is government-induced inflation. What a show we have planned today. In studio is Dr. Jill Vecchio. You know her. She is one of the few people in America that actually read the complete Unaffordable Care Act, also known as the PPACA, I think it is, and Obamacare. And Dr. Jill, we should not be passing anything until our representatives, our congressmen, and our senators read it.
No kidding. But that is the norm these days, isn't it?
Thousands and thousands of pages that become law.
Right.
You know, this was never the way it was supposed to be.
Exactly. And we should also have the opportunity to be told who's writing this legislation. So much of it, Obamacare was written by the insurance companies. We don't even know who all wrote Obamacare. We know it was a team of thousands over many, many years. But I think we should know who wrote these pieces of legislation. Because you know that if it's an industry, that they're going to write it to their own benefit. So if we find out, wait a second, in this bill, in Obamacare, the insurance companies wrote some of this legislation, show me what part they wrote. The pharmaceutical companies wrote this part, show me what part they wrote. It's not, this legislation is written by interested parties represented by lawyers that draw up this legislation over long periods of time, and I think people don't know that.
Well, you know, you and I have had many conversations, and I had never really thought about that. I've come up with the moniker PBIs, politicians, bureaucrats,
exactly,
and interested parties. And there used to be this narrative that the Democrat Party was for the little guy and the Republicans were those fat cat, you know, businessmen. Well, we're finding out that on both sides of the aisle, big government and big business like each other, and the Democrat Party is certainly become a party of big business and does not represent the little guy, and we must reclaim this American idea. We are in 2022, and Jill, we are at a remarkable time in our history, and as I say to our listeners, I so appreciate each and every one of you. You're each treasured, valued, you have purpose. Today, strive for excellence. Take care of your heart, your soul, your mind, and your body. We were made for this time. And I'm encouraged. People are becoming involved. But there's so much chaos and confusion on all of these issues. Jill, that's why we do this show, and it's great to have you here. We're going to be having you and Dr. It cracks me up, Dr. Jack Linesweiler and Dr. Jill Vecchio. So Dr. Jack and Jill are going to be on our show today, producer Steve. But also, I get to work with amazing people. And that is producer Steve, Zach, Patty, Keith, Charlie, Jen, and all the people here at Crawford Broadcasting. It's a great show, producer Steve.
Well, thank you. We all do our part, and it's we're small, but we are mighty. So
it's amazing what this group of people puts together. It's pretty astounding. So it's an honor to get to do this, and thank you to all you listeners out there. Jill, a couple of things. I don't want us to get jammed up because, you know, the show, it's like when you're here, it's like a snap of the fingers and the show's over. So first thing I want to go to our quote for today, and that is George Orwell. And he was an English novelist, essayist, journalist, and critic. His work is characterized by lucid prose, biting social criticism, and total opposition to totalitarianism. He was born in 1903. He died in 1950. Of course, he wrote Animal Farm in 1984. But he said, "The further a society drifts from the truth, the more it will hate those that speak it."
Exactly right. And we're seeing that now all the time, aren't we? Censorship and...
Yes.
Right. Exactly.
Yes. And the another thing has been interesting is self-censorship. And that is something that has been occurring for quite some time, where in polite company used to not talk about politics and religion. I'm like, well, what else is there? But, wait a minute. How about we have a dialogue? And let's actually kick the tires on all these ideas. And that is what you do on a regular basis,
and I
Dr.
think
Jill.
what I find encouraging these days, there's a lot to be discouraged about, but what I find encouraging is that so many more people are affected by what's happening, like overtly affected. They can't help but notice that
you mean like gas prices, energy prices?
Exactly. They can't help but start to think about public policy and politics. And now they're openly talking about it with each other.
Right.
And I find that has really changed in the last, I would think, even 3 or 4 years, that more and more people are approaching others, their neighbors and their friends, saying, "What is going on here? I want to learn more about this. I have friends that would never want to talk about politics, and now they're coming to me going, "What's going on here?
Right,
you know, we need to talk about this. Can we get some people together and figure this out?"
Well, and so the group of girls coming over tonight, and if you want more information about this, let me know. But it's the mother group is called Wine and Tapas. It started with just a few women coming over to my house, and we were just talking, and we started in 2013. But the sister groups are all called Tapas and Topics, and you've started one at your house.
Right. Mine is co-ed, so it doesn't have to be couples, obviously, but and really anybody can come, and I'm doing one on...
Sunday.
This Sunday, yes. On Sunday, it's Sunday evening, and I'm going to be doing a talk on Central Bank, World Bank, and International Monetary Fund. So I've done a lot of research on that. It's based on that book, Creature from Jekyll Island, which is so good.
Okay.
Yes, it will. It sounds like a dry topic, but nobody knows anything about it. That's why I wanted to learn about it, because I didn't understand it. And now, once you understand it, I tell you what, it answers a lot of questions. Everything you hear about inflation and debt and World Bank and the euro and all this stuff, you will now understand it.
Well, and you've given that at my house as well. And so the girls are coming over tonight. I'm headed up to Boulder for theirs today, Vibrant Group. I was up in Windsor on Monday night, and out in South Jeffco, there's one. If you're interested in starting one, we can help you. It's very organic, but again, it's people coming together, becoming informed. But don't want to get us behind, because producer Steve, yesterday there was a hearing on Capitol Hill, and this is very telling, this dialogue between Senator Ted Cruz, and set this up for us, Steve.
Well, there were three big events going on. Rand Paul went after Fauci again in their committee meeting. Biden went to Georgia to deliver a speech and regretted it. And the third thing was Ted Cruz having this committee meeting, I guess, of sorts with, her name is Jill Sanborn. She's the executive assistant director of the FBI's National Security Branch. Now, he's grilling her. He's hitting her hard with these questions, but she might as well have not been here because she could not answer a single one. And that alone is very discriminating.
Okay. So, Seth, go ahead. Let's hear it.
How many FBI agents or confidential informants actively participated in the events of January 6th?
Sir, I'm sure you can appreciate that I can't go into the specifics of sources and methods.
Did any FBI agents or confidential informants actively participate in the events of January 6th, yes or no?
Sir, I can't answer that.
Did any FBI agents or confidential informants commit crimes of violence on January 6th?
I can't answer that, sir.
Did any FBI agents or FBI informants actively encourage and incite crimes of violence on January 6th?
Sir, I can't answer that.
Ms. Sadburn, who is Ray Epps?
I'm aware of the individual, sir. I don't have the specific background to him.
Well, there are a lot of people who are understandably very concerned about Mr. Epps. On the night of January 5th, 2021, Epps wandered around the crowd that had gathered. And there's video out there of him chanting, "Tomorrow, we need to get into the Capitol, into the Capitol." This was strange behavior, so strange that the crowd began chanting, "Fed, Fed, 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 Fed." Ms. Sadburn, was Ray Epps a Fed?
Sir, I cannot answer that question. Mm.
The next day, on January 6th, Mr. Epps is seen whispering to a person, and 5 seconds later, 5 seconds after he's whispering to a person, that same person begins to forcibly tear down the barricades. Did Mr. Epps urge them to tear down the barricades?
Sir, similar to the other answers, I cannot answer that.
Ms. Sadburn, a lot of Americans are concerned that the federal government deliberately encouraged illegal and violent conduct on January 6th. My question to you, and this is not an ordinary law enforcement question, this is a question of a public accountability. Did federal agents or those in service of federal agent actively encourage violent and criminal conduct on January 6th?
Not to my knowledge, sir.
Okay, Producer Steve, thank you so much. And again, what was her title?
Her name, Jill Sanborn, Executive Assistant Director of the FBI's National Security Branch.
Boy, Dr. Jill, it sure seems to me like most of the answers should have been no, instead of when he said, was the FBI involved in this? The answer should have been no.
Yeah, and, I can't say. I can't talk about it.
Yeah, and that is the other thing, not to my knowledge. That is cover for...
Right. Plausible deniability.
Exactly. Right. And I think it's very important, and we talk about this all the time, that... we continue to search for truth and clarity, the truth ultimately will come out. And that's why this discussion that we're going to have with you, Dr. Jill Vecchio, and Dr. Jack Lyons-Weiler. And Dr. Jack has been on a regular basis. He continues to search for truth regarding all of this, regarding the COVID-19 Wuhan, China virus. And a lot has happened over the last month. So we're going to go to break. Before we do that, though, Kirsch Insurance Group is another great sponsor of the show. They're experts in the Medicare arena. They're brokers, so they work with a lot of different companies. And this particular point in time is the open enrollment period, where from the beginning of January to the end of March, you can make one change on your Advantage plan. That's what the government says. It's always clear as mud to me. That's why you need somebody like Kirsch Insurance Group. So be sure and check them out. Their website is iKirsch, that's iKirsch.com. That's iKirsch.com. We're going to go to break. When we come back, important conversation with Dr. Jill Vecchio and Dr. Jack Lyons-Weiler. Stay tuned.
Home ownership and private property rights help you build wealth for you and your family. RE/MAX Alliance award-winning realtor Karen Levine understands this. Supply is super tight right now. This is why you need a seasoned professional with excellent negotiating skills on your side of the table, whether buying or selling an existing home or buying a new build. As a member of the National Association of Realtors Board of Directors, Karen Levine volunteers hours of her time to help you build your American dream. Call her today at 303-877-7516. Again, that's 303-877-7516.
partnership with Kim and are not affiliated with or in partnership with KLZ or Crawford Broadcasting. If you would like to support the work of the Kim Munson Show and grow your business, contact Kim at her website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I'm Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter there. You can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. And thank you to all of you who support us. I greatly appreciate that. We are an independent voice. We search for truth and clarity and look at these issues through the lens of freedom versus force, force versus freedom. And on the line with us is Dr. Jack Lyons-Weiler. He is the founder of the Institute for Pure and Applied Knowledge. He is a scientist. You can find many of his writings on Substack. Dr. Jack, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you so much, Kim. It's good to be back.
Oh, my gosh. These shows are so important, and it goes so quickly. And Dr. Jill Vecchio, my great colleague, wanted to be in studio here to co-host with me, so she's here as well.
Hi, Dr. Jack.
Hey, Jill,
I have to say that.
To you.
I think she's president of your fan club.
I think so.
Okay. The way I initially set this up, and I was looking at all of your articles on Substack, and I would highly recommend that people look those up. And I continue to have listeners that always reach out and ask for your name each show. So I'm going to say it again. It's Dr. Jack Lyons-Weiler, W-E-I-L-E-R. But one of your most recent articles, Jack, you said that you had a pediatrician friend that recently had reached out to you, and he's seeing a number of different patients, and they have respiratory symptoms, and he's testing for COVID-19, but you said he knows that something is not quite right. How did that conversation go with him, Jack?
All right, so I've been interacting with this doctor who is first of all, let's make it clear, it's not Paul Thomas, the pediatrician from Oregon. It's a different doctor. I've been interacting with this guy for about 3 years. And he calls me. He and his wife call me. She's the vice president of my fan club, apparently. Anyway, he calls me from time to time when he's confused about things, which I take as a high honor. He is a pediatrician. And my jaw hit the floor because he said, I'm running 30 to 40 rapid antigen tests a day in the clinic. I said, who are you testing? He said, well, you know, he's a pediatrician, so he said my patients, but I know he's talking about children. He said, I'm testing people that either have some respiratory illness or they're people that are concerned that they have COVID because someone in the family had a respiratory illness and maybe they tested positive for COVID, or maybe they didn't. And I said, Jeff, listen, got a problem here. The problem is that that test, the rapid antigen test, is not specific for COVID-19. It'll pick up other common cold viruses like HKU1. And the science behind how they determine that the rapid antigen assay, the one that you can go to the drugstore and it's an in-home test, is supposed to be useful. When the FDA gave the emergency use authorization, the FDA never required the companies to show that it was specific for COVID-19. They only required them to do a computational analysis that I teach in Bioinformatics 101, where you're just lining up the amino acids of the protein to see if they match. But the problem with doing it that way is that the tests themselves react to proteins that are in your nasal cavity, in your nostrils, specifically, based on the shape of the protein, not just the sequence of the protein. I know that sounds complicated, but the shape of a protein determines whether it interacts with other proteins or not, whether it interacts with antibodies. So I'm talking about the kinds of tests where you swipe your nostrils 15 times on both sides and you put it in the bottom hole and you put the solvent up on the top. Everybody's running them. This is a pediatrician, and he's read my articles, and he knows about the problem with the false positive PCR that I hammered on. And so in this article on popular rationalism, I took the time to lay out, because he asked me the question. He goes, okay, I've got 30 to 40 rapid antigen tests. I know they're not all positive. Even though they test positive, what do I do? Mm-hmm. And I said, well, listen, what you want to do is, first of all, stop testing anybody that doesn't have any symptoms. Simply because somebody was in contact with somebody that had a respiratory illness doesn't mean that respiratory illness was COVID. We're in flu season. And so, you know, I reminded him that we have influenza A and influenza B. We have something called parainfluenza, the symptoms of which are very similar to COVID-19 Omicron. And then we have all the others, all the other respiratory symptoms, that respiratory viruses, like RSV, and potentially, you know, the common colds that come around every once in a while. And some of those are going to test positive. And you're going to set off the families into thinking that they have COVID. You're going to create data that tells the schools that a child has to stay home if they're in a state where the school has that policy or the state has that policy, and they don't have, and they're not sick, and only the symptomatic can spread COVID. And I'm going to get to this issue of asymptomatic spread of COVID too, because initially we were told 40, 50, 60% of people with COVID don't have any symptoms and that they're a risk because they're spreading. Well, that's not how the biology of the virus worked in Wuhan. It's not how it worked in Alpha, Beta, Gamma. But then, okay, with Delta and now Omicron, they're saying, look at all these cases that we have, and people are getting reinfected. Well, how do we know they're not false positives? And that's the big problem. I'm working with Dr. Hsin-Hang Lee out of Milford, Connecticut. He's got 30 years of experience in molecular pathology diagnostics, which trumps my 20 years, but together we have 50 years, half a century of experience in molecular diagnostics. Independent lives. We didn't work together until COVID. Excuse me. And he estimates that the false positive rate of the PCR test for COVID is 91%.
Because of this cross-reactivity?
Okay. Well, the PCR test is not cross-reactivity. The antigen test is cross-reactivity. But the PCR test will amplify anything. If you take the PCR test and test it on a pineapple and let it run for 40 or 50 cycles, 45 cycles, you'll go above the detection limit, the detection level required to detect it on the machine. And that's why we need to use a cycle threshold of like 28, 27.
Right. I thought the WHO changed it down after Biden took office. I thought they went down to 20 or 25 cycles.
Now, Jill, Jack, can you – I don't really understand what you two are talking about. What is this exactly, Jack?
Sure. Let me break it down. First, I want to say is that we don't follow World Health Organization. We follow CDC. What CDC says is that it's proprietary information with the cycle threshold is that's used by these kits from PCR by the companies. And I had about 30 people contact their public health administrations in their states to ask for the cycle threshold that's used, and the same answer came back. It's proprietary. So the World Health Organization might have their opinion about it. What the CDC did was, and you're not going to believe this, but the CDC said, listen, if you're vaccinated, we're not going to follow up on your case unless you have a cycle threshold that's less than 28 and you're sick or you're dead. But for the unvaccinated, they still are allowing, even now, the PCR cycles to go all the way up to 45. Here's the problem. Let me explain PCR in a nutshell. It's the cycle threshold is like a speed limit, okay? And if Dr. Jill has a hot rod, okay, and the question is, in a certain period of time, is she going to reach the speed limit? But I have a junker, okay, so my car's a junker. In that same period of time, I'm not going to reach the speed limit. And the PCR does is it takes a copy of the virus, some target sequences on the virus, and it makes millions of copies of them. And if the virus is not present, the test will glom onto any of the DNA in the human sample and push through. And we know that so Dr. Hsin-Hang Lee estimates it at 91%, but we know there's published false positive rates of 40%. The original one was 11%. The problem with the false positives is that there's a lot of dangerous problems. Number one, everybody thinks that the epidemic is worse than it is. Number two, if you test positive with an antigen or a PCR and it's a false positive, you now think you have natural immunity. And if you're in a risk group and you think you had COVID and you breezed through it, you might let your guard down. You might walk right into, say, a very large gathering or a party or something, and you might yourself become symptomatic and go someplace thinking, well, it can't be COVID. I already tested positive. Right? And so we also now, it completely warps our perception of Omicron if 91% of the cases in the, that are being hospitalized are actually false positives and there's something else, people aren't getting the right treatment. And further, we now think that you can get COVID twice, even though you've had natural immunity. And a recent study showed that for 13 months, people that had severe COVID, almost 100% of them have very strong antibodies still 13 months later to two proteins in the virus. And if you had weak COVID, mild COVID, you only have about 50% of the people have antibodies 13 months later, but those people probably had false positive PCRs. So this PCR problem, this false positive problem, is so pervasive that it's warping and distorting everyone's view about what Omicron is, about what COVID is, about what a patient might have, how they should be treated. Imagine you have bacterial pneumonia and your PCR falls positive simply because they used a high threshold on you, and you don't get antibiotics for your bacterial pneumonia.
Wow.
What's going to happen?
Wow. Dr. Jack, we're going to go to break. We're talking with Dr. Jack Lyons-Weiler and Dr. Jill Vecchio's in studio. Before we do that, though, Lauren Levy, who is a great sponsor of both the Kim Munson Show and America's Veteran Stories. He is a specialist in the mortgage arena. He's a broker. He works with a lot of different companies. And he's been able to help a lot of people save a lot of money with their mortgages. Lauren Levy, welcome to the show.
Hey, good morning, Kim. This is an interesting one for me because I apologize for my voice.
Well, I understand, as you know. Couple of things. First of all, interest rates, we're into 2022. Can people still do well in refinancing their mortgage or getting a new mortgage?
They can still do well. They're definitely moved up slightly into the lower threes now with the action of the Federal Reserve, but you can still get a good rate.
Okay, great. And one other thing, I'm listening to your voice thinking I want to be cognizant of that, but I just, your quick comment then, Lauren Levy, regarding what we talked about yesterday, where the Fed vice chair had been doing insider trading, and he's stepping down. What's your thoughts on that, Lauren?
Yeah, that was part of like Elizabeth Warren's sort of, she went after some of these people. They knew they were going to lower rates. They knew they were going to go to zero and really spur the economy. But they knew it was going to be looked at as a negative thing when COVID first started. So the accusation is that he sold stock right before they did this and then let things settle out and bought them back at a much lower price once the economy really tanked right after COVID started. And so that's why he's resigning. You know, it wasn't that he had insider information on the company itself or the companies that he sold. He had insider information on the actions of the Federal Reserve and what that might have done to the overall stock market. And it's almost the same thing. So that's why he's out.
Okay. But interestingly enough, Nancy Pelosi, who she and her husband apparently made $30 million on call options.
Yep.
And just to explain to our listeners, a call option is you don't actually buy the stock. You buy this option that says that that you can, how does that work, Lauren, that you can sell the stock?
A call option gives you the right to buy a stock. If it goes up, you have the right to buy it at a lower price that you locked it in at without buying it. You bought the option to buy it at a higher price if it goes up. At the same, if you lock in an option on a stock at $20 and it goes to $80, you can still buy it for $20, and you've made that gain all the way up to $80. And so, but the thing with Nancy Pelosi, where people have trouble with her, is she doesn't actually trade. Everything is done in her husband's account, and she's been able to avoid a link between her knowing stuff and him making trades. And that's how she's gotten around this for so long, is that she doesn't actually have an account. So there's actually people now that track her husband's trading activity and try to follow it and emulate it and just do what he does because they think that she's onto something.
You think? You think that she's... I guess so. But sometimes if something's legal, it doesn't make it right, Lauren. This doesn't pass the smell test with me. So, Lauren Levy,
exactly.
I'm going to give your voice a break here, and we'll talk to you next week. But that's Lauren Levy with Polygon Financial Group, an expert in the mortgage arena. His phone number is 303-880-8881. I'm glad I have that memorized, Lauren. It's 303-880-8881. We'll talk to you next week. Take care of that voice.
All right, I try. Thank you, Kim.
Okay, great. We'll be right back with Dr. Jill Vecchio and Dr. Jack Lyons-Weiler.
With the federal government printing money, it looks like inflation is on the horizon. That is why you should lock in a low rate now on your mortgage. Lauren Levy with Polygon Financial Group is here to help. Lauren works with a variety of lenders to assist you in finding the mortgage that is just right for you. Locking in a low rate now will save you thousands of dollars over the life of your loan. Don't procrastinate. Don't wait any longer. Call Lauren today at 303-880-8881. That's 303-880-8881.
Would you have ever dreamed that freedom of speech, freedom of thought, freedom of assembly, and freedom of religion would be under assault and attack in America? Unbelievably, it is happening right before our eyes. That is why it is important to keep free-thinking, independent voices on the airwaves, the internet, and social media. Kim Munson is one of those important voices. Help her keep independence alive. Go to KimMunson.com to contribute, to join Kim in the battle of ideas raging in America today. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I'm Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter there. You can email me at Kim@KimMunson.com as well. In studio with me is Dr. Jill Vecchio. On the line is Dr. Jack Lyons-Weiler. He is the founder of the Institute for Pure and Applied Knowledge. You can find him at Substack under Popular Rationalism. Dr. Jill, I can see you've got a lot of questions here for Dr. Jack.
I did, you know, based on what you were talking about with the false positives, the misuse of the testing, and I have a friend that works for CLIA. She inspects laboratories, and the first thing she said 2 years ago was, they're already misusing this test. It was never meant to be used for asymptomatic people, and you reiterated that this morning. Because of, and then the non-PCR test, so PCR is a type of test that seems more accurate but being misused as well. Like, it could be more accurate, should be more accurate if it was used properly. The rapid tests, the rapid antigen tests, have a lot of cross-reactivity with other viruses, including other maybe adenocoronaviruses that are the common cold. Right now we're in cold and flu season. I guess my overall question is, considering all of this bad testing, and we know the overall data has been so abused and misused and misrepresented since COVID started, what is Omicron and how much is it an issue at all, is my question.
Yeah, that's a great question, and anybody would have to hazard a guess at that, because we must be at a point where natural immunity through infection is starting to take have an effect, you know, and we know that the actual immunity from the vaccines wane after 5 months or so, but people have B cells and T cells, which are the memory cells that provide immunity. So it may be that we have basically 100% false positives potentially. And it's possible, but what we need to do is sequence.
Right,
we
right.
need to sequence the actual sample from the patient, and that's what Dr. Sang-Hang Lee does in Milford, Connecticut. I don't have a financial relationship with him, but he's in Milford, Connecticut at Milford Molecular Diagnostics, and he's created Sanger sequencing, which is the FDA gold standard up until COVID for confirming PCR results. And you're right. Before COVID, they would never have done this. In fact, they shut down SARS-CoV-1 using PCR the correct way in 2003.
Right. And, I mean, this is an RNA virus, so we shouldn't expect it to behave that much differently than the flu. And we know that the flu mutates just like an RNA virus. So the mutation stuff is expected. Considering these mutations, are, number one, they're just assuming, you know, when Delta started, anybody who tested positive, because they didn't have a specific test for Delta, anybody who tested positive was just told they had Delta, even though they'd been vaccinated and everything else. It's like, okay, well, the vaccine didn't fail, you just got a different variant. All this stuff is such a mess. But the COVID, are they changing the tests so that they will be specific? Are there any changes happening in the tests over time so that they're more specific for whatever variant they're claiming is predominant out there? And also, are the boosters being altered to be specific for the variants?
So CDC got in trouble because the public glommed on to and woke up to the fact that the PCR test could not distinguish between influenza and coronavirus. That speaks to the public. They understand that. So all the technical stuff we talked about, you know, can be confusing. But that's what it means. So CDC responded to that saying, okay, we're going to encourage the development of tests that can detect both influenza and coronavirus. Well, there already are multiplex tests for respiratory viruses that can check everything else. So one of the things that I told Dr. Jeff was, listen, run a multiplex first. And if they don't have something else and they still have symptoms, then check them, but only if they've been exposed to COVID. So the whole thing, everybody wants to unwrap a kit, get an answer, and it's yes or no. We don't live in Hollywood. That's Hollywood. What we live in is a complex world where you have to take the prior condition of the patients, you have to take their exposure, you have to take whether the person was confirmed COVID that they were exposed to, you have to take their symptoms, and then you have to maybe do a test. But what's the first test? The first test for breast cancer in a high-risk breast cancer clinic is that the woman walks through the door. A woman that walks through the door has a 25% increased risk of breast cancer just by walking through the door of a high-risk breast cancer clinic. So it's the same thing with COVID. If you've been exposed to somebody and they had COVID and it's confirmed COVID, and we can go back and forth around in circles on what that means, you're at a higher risk. And so what we want to do is think about people according to what population they're actually from. If somebody had COVID, the chances of them having COVID now are nil if they really had COVID. So the yes, they're developing tests that will test for Omicron. But by the time those tests come online, Omicron's going to be gone. Yes, they're developing vaccines for Omicron. But by the time vaccines come online, Omicron's going to be gone.
Right.
So we're chasing ourselves around in circles here. Everyone needs to stop and really think. Go open up a statistics book if you're a physician and read on conditional probability and draw a decision tree. I have a decision tree at Popular Rationalism. You start with the full population. It splits into the symptomatic and the asymptomatic. Guess what? Big difference in probabilities just there by splitting them into two. And then what if they were exposed versus not exposed? So you layer that on top of it. And then you go from there before you even order a test. It doesn't take that long to sit down and do a little hand calculations, okay, to say, oh, okay, or even in your head. Now, some of this is going on, I'm sure. There are people, physicians that I know, that run multiplex tests. But do they do it first? Okay, let's rule in para-influenza for this kid first before we give him a diagnosis of COVID and scare everyone? Okay, so you see what I'm saying? We have everything backwards. And because we have everything backwards, the physicians need to stop listening to the CDC. They need to stop listening to the FDA. Go ahead and use an antigen test where we didn't even require that the companies tell us that the antigen test is specific to COVID. And when a doctor tells you you have COVID, that's black and white. In reality, it's a probabilistic diagnosis. The doctors should know this, and they should convey that uncertainty onto the patient so the patient can incorporate that knowledge of uncertainty into their own decision making. We all want an answer. You're not incompetent if you give an uncertain answer. You're incompetent if you give a firm, wrong answer.
Hmm. Dr. Jack, I've been thinking a lot about this through all of our conversations with Jill, others. And first of all, the first thing that I've realized is that we have kind of looked to modern medicine to fix so many things. And through this whole COVID narrative, I realized that each of us needs to take charge of our own health. And there's therapeutics out there if you do get COVID, but just exercise, it seems, and I want your comments on this, vitamin D, zinc, just basic things of taking care of yourself, not only for COVID, but just for life. This has kind of been a jolt for me to actually just really realize that. I guess we should, but it's kind of reconfirmed that, I guess, Jack.
My own personal life experience confirms that as well. I've recently lost a mother. And
I'm sorry, Jack, I didn't hear you. You lost what?
I lost a loved one to COVID last month.
I'm sorry.
And this person was on the Brownstein protocol, the maintenance protocol, but lapsed on the protocol. This person's spouse stayed on the protocol, and she was given the diagnosis of COVID too, but she made it out of the hospital and he didn't. The Brownstein protocol, Dr. David Brownstein, there's a baseline protocol. You write about vitamin D, you write about vitamin C, you write about vitamin A. Iodine is a supplement that should be added. Zinc, quercetin, I believe quercetin is absolutely essential for every American that doesn't want to get respiratory viruses. Quercetin and zinc together, you can take it. Quercetin is made from onion, okay? You can make it yourself. It's very, very simple to take supplements every day to give yourself that added boost of protection, right? But the SEC shut down Dr. David Brownstein for advertising his protocol. He has actually had his patients come online, give an interview, and he was publishing their interviews. They said there's no science, so we published a study in the journal Science, Public Health Policy, and the Law. He doesn't see anybody that gets his baseline protocol and treatment right. He's got a treatment. There's, you know, the FDA, the FDA's upper limit of vitamin D is way, way low. Their recommendations on how what a safe level of vitamin D is far too low. Dr. Keith Baggerly at MD Anderson Cancer Center showed this by going over the math. They made they made an error. You can have, the FDA says, what, 400 international units a day or something? In reality, you know, I've been taking 5,000 a day, and if I feel like I've got a cold or something, I'll up it to 10,000. I'm not giving any medical advice. I'm telling you what a scientist, MD, PhD at MD Anderson says about vitamin D. So the FDA has us all at increased risk of cancer. If your vitamin D is low, you have higher risk of cancer. And that was his concern, and that's why he outed the FDA for their error. They still haven't revised their guidelines on vitamin D.
Wow, that is fascinating. Jill, we're going to go to break. Do you have any comments on this before we come back on? I have another question.
Well, I think it can never be emphasized enough, and it's not being spoken of enough. We wouldn't have nearly the hospitalizations and deaths from COVID if anybody was treating patients. Doctors aren't giving patients any advice about anything. And
we'll say many doctors.
Certainly not very many.
Yeah.
Because I'm getting calls from people saying, I call my doctor and they're not giving me anything. You know, what do I do now? So I can't help but make the assumption that people at the CDC and wherever else in governments and WHO wanted these numbers to get so high for a reason, and I think it was the vaccine. And I said, I've been saying this on Kim's show since the very beginning of this. We talked about, nope, this is about a vaccine. You just wait. This is going to be about another vaccine. There's no scientific or medical explanation for a complete ignorance ignoring treatment and care prior to hospitalization.
Okay, Dr. Jack, your comment?
I have to agree. The ambulatory care that's outlined by the frontline doctors, Pierre Corey's work, Dr. Peter McAuliffe's peer-reviewed publications are all but being ignored. If you're a physician and you're not telling your patients, you know, to take a look at the ambulatory care protocols, listen, aspirin, full dose aspirin will stop blood clots. And COVID is a microvascular disease. It is blood clots in the lung. It is not pneumonia. They keep treating it like pneumonia once you get in the hospital. And once you get in the hospital, they can't even give you aspirin. If they give you remdesivir, you're stuck on that remdesivir protocol. If they go off of that protocol, they'll lose $20,000.
Aha. That's right. The dot that needs to be connected. Let's go to break. On the line with us is Dr. Jack Lyons-Weiler, founder of Institute for Pure and Applied Knowledge. You can find his articles at Substack under Popular Rationalism. Dr. Jill Vecchio is in studio. She actually read the complete Unaffordable Care Act, also known as Obamacare. And before we do that, though, the show comes to you Again, another great sponsor, that's Castlegate Knife and Tool, family-owned business located right here in Sedalia, Colorado. They have knives from the best blade makers from throughout the world. And whether or not you're a chef or a sportsman or a collector, they're the place for you. I was at a wedding this last weekend, was very pleased to give the bride and groom a beautiful knife addition to their, you know, knives are like for life. If you have good knives, Dr. Jill Vecchio, you'll use them forever. So I was.
Well, my husband does most of the cooking, so he'll use them forever.
He'll appreciate
that. Which
makes
it an even better investment.
Exactly.
When somebody else does the cooking.
Exactly. So CastlegateKnifeAndTool.com. It's Castlegate.com. Be sure to check that out. That's Castlegate.com. We'll be right back with Dr. Jack and Dr. Jill.
Three Points Financial is a fiduciary financial planning company focused on helping individuals and families. Mary Alpers and Steve Kruse at Three Points Financial specialize in investment strategies, tax planning and preparation, and retirement planning with no product sales or commissions. Tax laws have changed and will continue to change. Inflation is real. Three Points Financial helps you maneuver through these changes to achieve your financial success. For clarity and a solid, relevant financial and investment plan, while working with a company that puts your interests at the forefront, schedule a no-obligation initial consultation at threepointsfinancial.com. That's threepointsfinancial.com.
You'd like to get in touch with one of Kim Munson's sponsors, but you can't recall their phone number. Find a full list of advertising partners on Kim's website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim, M-O-N-S-O-N.com.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I'm Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website. That's Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter there. You can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. Thank you to all of you who support us. And be sure and support all of my sponsors, because they are integral in making sure that our independent voice is on the air. In studio with me is Dr. Jill Vecchio, good friend. She actually had read the complete Unaffordable Care Act, Obamacare, and had really seen the dangers. And we're seeing some of those things occur right now in our country. Dr. Jack Lyons-Weiler is on the line with us, and he's the founder of Institute for Pure and Applied Knowledge. You can find his articles at Substack under Popular Rationalism. Dr. Jack, I was talking to a friend just recently who said that they have six friends, double vaxxed, boosted, all have COVID, two in the hospital, one died, all are sick. How can that happen, double vaxxed and boosted, and still get COVID?
Okay, yeah, good point. We know two people here in St. Clair Shores, Michigan, who were double vaxxed and died from COVID. Listen, kids born today are looking at 192 boosters over their lifetime from COVID, so that's not going to work. And I also want to point out that in Bloomberg.com today, the European Union regulators warned that frequent COVID-19 booster shots could harm or weaken the immune system. European Medicines Agency, specifically, they say they're going to, what they're saying is tire the immune system out. I've been saying this right from the beginning.
Yes,
you're not
going
to be able to boost every 5 months. You're not going to be able to boost every 6 months, every year. What you're going to do is you're going to confuse the heck out of the human immune system. Well, one of my articles in Popular Rationalism, I review a study. It's a complex study of what happened to the actual spike protein as the virus came into the human population. First, you had the Wuhan spike protein, and that seemed to have its own particular way of getting into the cell. Then you had the alpha spike protein, and that was very similar to Wuhan, but something changed with beta. There was variation that was associated with beta that we didn't know it at the time, but it set up Europe for what's called antibody-dependent disease enhancement.
That's what we talked about last time.
This is Dr. Fantini from France. Yeah, well, exactly. So Dr. Fantini in France did this amazing study. And the reason why people are getting sick when they're boosted, especially if it's Delta, and I don't know about Omicron, it appears to have undergone antigenic shifting as well as antigenic drifting. It's very different spike protein. But for Delta, from Beta to Delta, the vaccine's been driving the infections to make them make it more virulent. That's called disease enhancement. So if you think you're protected, you're vaccinated, and if you're listening, look up the Brownstein protocol and make sure that you have proper nourishment from A to Z. It's very, very, very important that you not rely on your vaccine immunity at this point, and even more so since the CDC hides the number of cases between the day one of the vaccine to day 14 after the second dose. We, for all we know, there may be increased risk of COVID-19 in the first, 5 weeks after your first exposure to the vaccine. That's through the roof. So you really have to take control of your own immunity here with nutrition and sunshine, and, don't stress people out. If you're in a fight and an argument with somebody, please get proper rest and, stock up on all the supplements that are on the Brownstein protocol. It's very important.
Okay. Dr. Jill, we've got about 5 minutes left. I know that you always have important questions. And in fact, your number one question, Dr. Jack jumped right into that. What would you like to ask him here?
Well, I think we touched before on the antibody-dependent enhancement, antibody-dependent viral enhancement. I mean, there are a few different permutations of what it's called. ADE was what I could get the most articles when I Googled ADE or antibody-dependent enhancement. In other words, for the people out there, when you get the vaccine and are then exposed to coronavirus or, the same virus, but coronavirus specifically, your body can have an enhanced response to that re-exposure to COVID.
And enhanced is not a good way.
Enhanced in a bad way. Yeah. So that you get inflammatory. There is a whole slew of different symptoms and processes that it can stimulate, none of which are good. So a lot of the people that are, and this was well documented for decades, that's why they don't have a cure for the common cold. That's why we can't get a vaccine for the common cold, was because of this enhancement. And I think they are completely ignoring that. You don't hear a word from the CDC about this, which is, I find, really disturbing. And nobody seems to be talking about, are the hospitalized patients who have been vaccinated, what are they experiencing? And is it this ADE at all? Could you comment on that, Dr. Jack?
Yeah, I absolutely can. So the disease enhancement that occurred wasn't restricted to immunopathology. It wasn't just that COVID was worse. These people had reactions off-site, which means they had the animals and the patients that got, say, the RSV experimental vaccine. They had splenitis and hepatitis, and they had blood clots, and they had things that were unanticipated. There's something about respiratory coronaviruses, specifically around the family of beta coronaviruses, that if you vaccinate against them, you get this strange capacity of the virus to be able to enter cells and make more disease if you're vaccinated and then exposed. Well, if you live in a world with COVID and you're vaccinated, you're going to get re-exposed.
Right.
Okay. And so you're exactly right. The animal studies showed this for MERS, for SARS, for RSV, the human studies in RSV, they abandoned the vaccine. Well, when they went to study the animal, first of all, Fauci said that they were going to skip the animal studies, and then there was an uproar, so they decided not to skip them. But they did it on rhesus monkeys instead of on
ferrets. Right.
You're supposed to use ferrets. Rhesus monkeys have a very, very muted immune response to respiratory viruses. We don't know why, probably because of large troop size and how cohesive they are. They've evolved some way of being able to deal with respiratory viruses very efficiently. But hamsters are more similar to us in terms of that immune response, and as are ferrets. So, yes, I think it's entirely possible and even likely that patients who are vaccinated who end up getting sick and get hospitalized, it's due to the disease enhancement that would not have occurred if they had not been vaccinated. And that sounds backwards, but the enhanced response is not a good immune response. It is a self-immune response. You're starting to attack your own body. You're getting easier viral entry into the cell between an interaction of the spike protein, the cell surface, and some other proteins in the cell membrane, and the antibody. So the vaccine antibodies are inexact, and they actually enhance the viral. And remember, this virus causes cells to stick together.
Right.
Right.
Now, I'm sorry to interrupt. One of the other things, when you're talking about the testing, they changed the animal testing because they knew that they already had information that from the ferrets for decades of research into coronavirus vaccines. They knew what happened to the ferrets when they were re-exposed. So they changed it in order to get this to market. And then when they did the human phase trials, they also never bothered to go through the step of re-exposing any of those people in those trials prior to worldwide vaccination. They never re-exposed them or challenged them with the virus again before they inoculated hundreds of millions of people, billions.
So, Dr. Jack, we've got minute left. Your comment on that.
Well, remember that they also had those clinical trials were short term, and then they vaccinated the placebo group. So you can't tell the difference.
Right.
And yeah, so what we're looking at is the stark possibility that every person that's been double dose vaccinated and boosted might be in for it with more severe COVID. And the CDC is now waking up to it, and they're starting to say things that sound a lot like me 18 months ago, right? They're starting to sound just like me 18 months ago,
yeah.
Because even they can't deny it anymore. Yes, the doctors lied to us when they said that there are no people in the ICU who were vaccinated. They said that they've never seen anybody in the ICU that's vaccinated. We knew people that went in that ICU had been vaccinated. We knew people who died from COVID. So just use your personal experience and your personal knowledge and your social networks and find out what's really happening and get active and tell your public health officials you know what's going on.
Absolutely. Dr. Jack Lyons-Weiler, we're out of time, but the quote I was thinking of you when I pulled this was George Orwell. He said, in a time of universal deceit, telling the truth is a revolutionary act. Dr. Jack Lyons-Weiler, thanks so much for being here. Let's get you scheduled for next month again.
Viva la revolution.
Yeah. Dr. Jill Vecchio, thanks for being here.
Thank you. Take care, everybody.
Okay, and my friends, today be grateful. Read great books, think good thoughts, listen to beautiful music, communicate and listen well, live honestly and authentically, strive for high ideals, and like Superman, stand for truth, justice, and the American way. My friends, you are not alone. God bless you, and God bless America.